My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. Joe Bedon is a man of many talents. He's an artist, an illustrator. He's a filmmaker taking on roles as writer, director, producer, sound designer, editor, and as a member of the art department. He's successfully made a feature film, The God Inside My Ear, and he's in the middle of raising funds through Kickstarter for his next feature, Sister Tempest. We have a lot to talk about, but before I get to my conversation with Joe, I want you to pause the show and visit Sister Tempest on Kickstarter. Be a part of the filmmaking process, and let's get this film made. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Joe Bedon! Welcome to the show, Joe, and thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
I love your enthusiasm.
I will say, like, in the introduction, like, editor, it's funny, because I think maybe assistant to the editor might be better.
Okay.
I just basically sat there and said, yeah, let's change that. Let's do this differently. That was my role as
editor. You had the tough one. Okay, so before we get to Sister Tempest and what's going on there, let me ask, when did you get yourself into filmmaking? How did you get into this madness in the first place?
Well, I did storyboards for a long time. I worked on a movie called Keanu with Key and Peele. I did storyboards for that movie.
Love that film.
Yeah. I did a lot of commercial, international and national commercials, just storyboards for them.
Right.
So I did a lot of storyboard work. But before then, not really anything. I did stuff in, you know, high school with friends.
Yeah.
Just with old video, you know. Like literally like the old school big video cameras and shit, you know, and, you know, me and my dad and my brother made old Super 8 sci-fi films when we were in elementary school.
Oh, cool.
That's like the extent of my filmmaking.
Yeah, but that's so cool that your dad would do that with you. That is awesome. Oh,
yeah, totally. He was like all about it.
Oh, man. So that's how you got your start.
Yeah, so God Inside My Ear was my first real, like, foray into, like, filmmaking myself.
Really?
You know? So, yeah.
You started with a feature.
Yes, because I was just like, go big or go home.
You know? Man, did you ever. I mean, seriously. You started
it was kind of like one of those things. I was about to turn 40, and it was like, well, I've always wanted to make a feature-length film. And if I never make another one, I just get one chance at it. That's the way I thought about it. So right. I'm going to make a feature-length film if I'm going to do it.
Oh,
so,
man, congratulations, man. Seriously.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just doing it, just accomplishing that task is monumental.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing was that I hooked up and surrounded myself with talented people like DPs and editors and, you know, and crew members and actors that knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So what did you just admit there, Joe, that you didn't know what you were doing?
Yes, absolutely. I read a movie. I read a book called Angry Filmmaker's Guide. And
I've read that.
Like right before I started working on God Inside My Ear, I read that book. And, you know, I just looked up a bunch of, like, you know, how-tos.
Yeah.
And then just kind of with that, like, very basic knowledge, I just ran with it. And so I definitely did a lot of things that you probably weren't the right way to do things.
Yeah.
Like, when I wrote the initial screenplay, I just wrote it without any software. I just wrote it, like, scene one, blah, blah, blah. Right. And my DP said, look, I'll put it into Celtics, whatever.
Yeah.
And he formatted it for me. So I got to see, oh, this is what a screenplay actually looks like. All right. God. I get it now.
Oh, and, man.
And then I did all the storyboards for the film,
oh, of course,
which was the lifesaver of the film,
right,
really, because we just followed those storyboards exactly. Right. And having worked with DPs and directors, I knew how to do a shot list.
Right.
You know, I knew how to do storyboards and that sort of thing. And so I did a shot list. I did storyboards. And then I was also like basically the line producer on the film as well. So I did craft services.
Was this a paid gig for everybody?
No. The first film was everyone just worked volunteer.
That's amazing.
And so it was just a labor of love for everybody. And it was just upfront with everybody. Look, you know, it's not paid. I basically paid out the first film ended up being a little under 10 grand for the whole budget.
Wow.
But basically it was mostly at 95% of that was just out of my pocket.
Wow.
I just saved the money and did it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just a labor of love, you know.
Wow. Good for you. Again, now you're my hero. Holy shit. The man had no clue what he was doing, and he put both feet in the deep end. That's how you do filmmaking. You know what? I've preached on this thing about just go out and make a film. Get out there and make a film. That's what you did. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
So I've read the synopsis for Sister Tempest, but
right.
I really think you should give a description of the film and not me. This is a really unusual film, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's a sci-fi, horror, art house, dark comedy, surrealist, just batshit crazy film. And it's mainly, the core of it is kind of a drama, a family drama.
Okay.
You know, about these two sisters that have a very conflicted relationship, and one of them goes missing, and the other sister has to kind of move on with her life while she's still worried about her missing sister. And so that's at the core of it, but there's lots of sci-fi elements. There's like space, there's a whole like space judge panel that comes in to judge this main character, Anne. There's lots of horror elements, there's lots of body horror stuff, cannibalism. There's some Nazis that kind of jump into the scene at one point. There's a lot of weird shit happening.
I like it.
But that's my love for weird cinema.
Yeah.
You know, for the first, for God's Time at Ear, I took like probably five or six films and kind of like used like little my favorite moments from those films and kind of amalgamated that into what was that film. And for this film, it's kind of the same thing. I had watched the movie Head, The Monkey's Head.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I watched it like five times in a row. And I was just like so enthralled by it. That was kind of the jumping off point for this film, Sister Tempest.
Yeah. You know, I've heard about that film. I have to see it.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Monkey's Head, it is a crazy-ass film. It feels like a stream of consciousness sort of thing. Like, oh, okay, we thought of this idea, but this idea makes me think of this idea, and this idea that makes me think of this idea.
Man. So it's just
and that's
kind of
what I did with Sister Tempest.
So you just flow right through the film.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Man, that's brilliant.
I love the idea of stream of consciousness writing, and I don't think it's shown enough in film, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
You know what? I've never written film in that way ever, but it's been an itch, but it's like there's a standard and you have to go to the three act structure and you know what I mean? So,
so you're
breaking the mold, man.
I want to. Yeah.
And
that's
you know
what I'm all about.
You know what? The first guy through the wall usually gets the most bloodied. So you know what I mean? So somebody who breaks that mold, either people really love what you're doing, or they just take it's the machine guns come out and you're riddled with bullets.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And you're willing to take that.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, well, you're my hero.
I did freelance art for a long time. I'm still an artist. That's what I do as my bread and butter. I sell art on the street in New Orleans. That's what I do for a living.
Wow.
And I make a living at it. I do fairly well. I do enough to where I can pay my bills and things. So I don't need to like start a new career.
Right.
And so I'm not going into film thinking, oh, I need to like please people. I don't want to. That's not my point. I want to get in there and do what I've always wanted to do artistically. you know.
So. That is fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Seriously, it takes balls, man, to do that. Yeah, because it's going against the grain. And well, as I said, you know.
And I think the older you get, the more you just don't give a shit about what people think anymore. Yeah.
Well, looking at me, then I should really not give a shit. But, but unfortunately, I'm still in that 3-act structure. I'm still not. But that's you know what? That's really cool. So, you know, if this is a stream of consciousness type of writing, how long did it take you to get that script down?
I wrote it in about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And then after I wrote it, I sent it out to a bunch of friends who I like trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me like, yo, this needs to change. This needs to change. So basically the first draft was complete insanity. And so then I kept shaving it down. I think I went through 5 drafts.
Wow. Yeah.
Shaving it down until we got into a semblance, something that made sense.
Right. Right. You know? So when Joe says he has trusted friends, he doesn't mean that those friends are going to pat him on the back and say, wow, you're a great writer.
Oh, no.
No, right? What do you mean when you say these trusted friends?
People that I feel like they understood. Okay, two kind of friends.
Right.
Ones that have the same taste as me.
Right.
And then the other kind of friends, people that I admire their talent. Like, I feel like they are grounded in the 3-act structure.
Right.
And they're grounded in like all those kind of things, the technique.
Yeah.
So I have my style friends and my technique friends.
Right.
And I kind of like send them out to both.
Yeah.
And then I glean what everyone's saying, what all of them are saying the same things, and I listen to that.
Right. That's a good point. That makes perfect sense because most people will take criticism the wrong way. They'll just it's their baby and they don't want people fucking with it, and how dare you say that. And but what you're looking for is you're looking for information, you're looking for people to be honest. And
absolutely.
When you get a consensus, if one person says it, they don't know what they're doing. But if 5 people say it or if 3 people say it, then you know there's a problem. You have to deal with it.
Absolutely. You know, and then the hoop to go through is I bring those things to my wife.
I say,
what do you think? Because I trust her more than anyone.
And is she honest with you?
Oh, absolutely.
She's brutally honest.
She's very honest, but like I like trust her opinion more than anyone. She's a muse sort of thing. So
beautiful.
So like if she says, look, even though everyone says this is stupid, I think you should keep it in there, then I usually do.
Well, that's cool. Well, no, it's cool that you have someone that you can trust so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I go to my wife first before I go to anybody else. That's the first person I go to.
Yeah, I go to her first and last.
Oh, dear, really? That's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's a bookend. You got to like it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about the screenwriting, but is there any advice you can give a first-time screenwriter who's just about to sit down and write something?
I say just write it. You know, one of the best pieces of advice, ironically, is that I ever heard was from George Lucas.
Hmm.
I was watching an interview with like Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
He just said, just finish your script. Like do the first draft as fast as you can and then go back and fix things. But the first draft, just run it through as fast as you can and write it all down. And then you can go back and fix things. And a lot of times people are perfectionists and they're trying to get those things done the first time or the second time. Just get it done
and then
worry about the details.
You know, you're going to, and if you get it done, you've got a finished script.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and not a lot of people can say that. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, there's a lot of people who are writers and can say that. But in the grand scheme of things, it's hard to do.
Yes,
get absolutely. Yourself finished. So that's a great piece of advice from George Lucas of all people. Oh my God.
Exactly.
And we both laugh about that. It's so ironic. Okay, so I want to jump into financing only because you only have a few days left on your crowdfunding campaign. So I want to talk about crowdfunding and what was the first steps that you took in creating your campaign?
I wrote a budget out first. That was the first thing, so I knew like what I should ask for.
Oh, and, that makes perfect sense. Oh, my God. Seriously, I wouldn't even think to do that first. I would be jumping ahead, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Write a budget out and then, you know, make all your social media pages. Mm-hmm. So then you can start kind of like sending out, you know, like posting things about the Kickstarter before it actually opens.
Right.
And inviting people to like it, like the pages and things. And so then you have a little bit of a following, you know what you're asking for, you know, that's probably the two best pieces of advice right there.
Okay. So you've done the, did you do this on your first film?
No. First film, I just self-funded.
You self-funded. You didn't do any of the, wow. So this is this your first crowdfunding campaign?
No, this is my sixth. I did a lot of Kickstarters for comic books.
Oh,
and
right.
So the very first Kickstarter I did was for a film. When I didn't know what the hell I was doing at all.
Yeah.
And this was like almost 10 years ago. And then that one failed.
Yeah.
And then after that, I just decided I was going to do Kickstarters for comic books. So I did four Kickstarters after that. And those were all successful. Those are all comic book Kickstarters.
Wow.
And so this is my sixth.
What? So you've got some experience doing this. People should listen to your advice then. Yeah, what's the one thing that you think people are doing sort of wrong when they crowdfund?
They don't personally message people.
Oh.
And that is something that, like, people feel like that's a no-no. And you're going to make some people mad,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But because some people just don't want to be, like, personally messaged.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much where most of your money's going to come from.
Really?
Like, I'd say a good 75% of your money will come from personally asking family and friends and just and acquaintances, people you don't even know, just your friends with on Instagram.
Right.
Send them a message. And like I send them a message, I say, look, this is my Kickstarter. Look, you don't have to give a dime. I won't be upset. It's totally cool. I just want to send this out to you. If you can do anything, that's great. If you can't do anything and just share it, that'd be amazing. But whatever you want to do, you know.
Yeah, that's important too, right? That's important is that if they can't give financially, at least they can be an evangelist and get out there and scream about it.
Yeah, totally.
Wow. Absolutely. So how did you go about developing a relationship with your audience for this particular campaign?
I mean, it's, you know, all the Facebook pages and like Sister Tempest Twitter pages and things, those you know what you do is you friend people, you ask them to follow the pages, and like with Twitter, with the Sister Tempest Twitter, you just follow people, and then you go and you like things that they're posting and you comment on things and you try to stay organic in a relationship. You know what I mean? It's good to probably have a team of people to help you with that sort of thing.
So do you have some people who are helping you?
Yeah, we did. I have a Sister Tempest secret, evangelist page kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Where I think it's like 12 or 13 people that are all in this secret little page. And like, I'll say, hey, just a reminder, you know, go send out messages and, you know, and share on social media. And maybe I'll have a new add-on reward and I'll let them all know, look, I just posted a new add-on reward on the Kickstarter. If you could share that. So, you know, you get a little team of people that will all share it and keep it kind of viral.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you also sounds to me like when you're personally messaging somebody, it's not a cut and paste situation. It's really, you're trying to connect with people.
Oh, no, it's definitely cut and paste.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, I changed the name, like, hey, so-and-so.
Of course.
But, you know, but then
there's so many of them, right?
If you didn't cut and paste, it would be, you'd be there for the rest of your life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can change it up a little bit, like with the cut and paste, you cut and paste it and then maybe change a couple words at the beginning. Like, hey, you know, just, you know, heard your dog died. I'm so sorry or something, you know, if someone died, you know, I don't usually send them a message,
that would be a good idea.
Or just got married. Congratulations, you know, and, or something like that.
Use some of the gifts that you got and sell them and give us some money. That would be perfect. That would be absolutely
perfect. You've got three blenders. Sell a couple of those blenders. You know?
Hey, something I did want to ask too was, How do you create those the gifts or the things that people are going to get for their contribution? How do you come up with those?
Well, with this movie, we decided, since we just made the last movie, it's finally coming out, just coming out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Right.
We figured most people are really wanting to get the Gun Simulator. So we're kind of using that as like a lot of the rewards. Right. So, you know, Gravitas Ventures, who's putting out Gun Simulator, they gave us a great deal on DVDs and Blu-rays. So we're able to like buy those from them and use those as Kickstarter rewards. You know, and like we're using posters, you know,
yeah.
You know, tickets are easy. Also, anything digital download is right. super easy. And of course, right. free overhead.
Right. I guess that's the thing, too. You don't have to pay for it. And it's easy yeah. to get to the person, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like we're doing like commentary on the film, digital download commentaries on the film from like me and the actors and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and so also, like, since I'm an artist and I have, like, hundreds of art prints that I sell on Etsy, that's another thing. Like, you know, an add-on reward is some of my art prints. And or, like, I think $500 reward level, I'll draw anything you want.
Wow.
Which is scary because I have some people that want me to draw some ridiculous things. But I'm like, hell, I just need to make this movie, you know.
Good for you, though. Seriously, that's awesome. You know, that you're yeah. willing to do that.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah, it's just using all your talents, you know, that you have and leveraging them as rewards, you know.
Wow. That's good. That's good stuff. That's good. So I like the idea of the digital idea, too, is that,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, because there is no overhead. And I am talentless. So,
well, also like a soundtracks to the film.
Oh, yeah.
We can just do digital rewards for that as well.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So now, before we go any further,
sure.
I just want people, and again, I need you to contribute to this campaign by searching Sister Tempest on right. Kickstarter, or just check the show notes, because I'm definitely yep. going to add a link there. I won't be offended if you pause right now and check out the campaign for Sister Tempest, because they need your help, people. Let's get this film made. Okay,
yes.
Now we're back.
Yeah, it's just a couple days left.
There's just a couple days left, so get your ass out there. Give the man some help. This is an awesome film that we're going to help. Okay, so here's a funding question for you.
Sure.
How do you keep the cost of your film low? Because you mentioned that first film was 10 grand, which is it's crazy low
sure.
for a feature. That's insane.
You ask as much for free as you possibly can.
I love your honesty. It's like, seriously, there'd be filmmakers who'd come up with all kinds of things to sound, but it's like, here's the deal, Ian.
Well,
you just ask for free shit.
That's what's frustrating about if you read any articles or read any interviews about like doing stuff for low budget or how to make things, they're always skirting around these questions.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. It's like, you're not giving me real answers here. Nothing I can really, you know, use.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just tell you know, if you go to somebody that wants to help, or you go to a location that you need to shoot at or whatever,
yeah.
you say, look, I have $25,000 to shoot the whole movie. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's not at all.
No,
it's like $100,000 is usually what,
yeah.
that's for a tiny budget film is
$100,000. That's my film. That's what
right.
That's the budget of my film. And that's the lowest I can go. So
that's tiny, tiny.
It's
budget.
Minuscule.
Yeah. And so, just saying, like, you're just being very flat out with people and saying, look, I don't have much money at all. What's the least you can do? And then also, like, giving back end points to
yeah.
people. You know, like, in the end, I just want to make the film. I don't really even care how much, like, if I get any money on the back end, I'll give away my points just to, like,
really?
Make this movie made. Yeah, I mean, if I can keep a few points, if I can keep like 10 points, I'll be
yeah.
happy.
10%.
You know? But I'll give these things out so people, like, if I can be free, if they'll give it to free and get a couple points in the back end,
sure.
then hell yeah, I'll do
sure.
it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Did you see any return on your investment in the first film? Is that just coming around now?
That's just coming. Well, we're getting a minimum guarantee. It's just a little bit. It's not even, it's like a tiny fraction of the money that I spent on the film.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'll get residuals.
Right.
I was talking to another guy who used the same company. He had a documentary.
Yeah.
That he went through them, and he gets about $250 a quarter from them. $250 a quarter from residuals.
That's not too bad for a $10,000 film.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
Right, exactly. So $250 a quarter, and I think they ended up selling their movie to one of the cable companies, cable channels, you know, and he got 10 grand, like a 10 grand little chunk from that, you know? So I think it's good that we should be a little more open about the money that we're making, because here's the thing, the distributors aren't open about it.
No.
And then we're, as filmmakers, are not saying numbers because we're scared to.
Yep.
And so the distributors are just screwing everyone.
Yeah, it's true.
That's all they're doing.
Yeah.
And like I said, I got a tiny fraction up front of what I could get, what I spent on the film.
Yeah.
From this company, right? And that's the best deal I could find out anywhere.
Wow.
So it just shows you that these companies, they don't give a shit. No. They're just filling up their catalogs. And so if there's a way that we can all be transparent more, then we can lobby for better upfront costs. We can lobby for better percentages and all that stuff.
Well, I promise to do that. I mean, I just mentioned my budget, so I'm obviously open about it. It's funny, I talked to Diane Bell, who won Sundance many years ago, and I've been talking to her during this process of my filmmaking, and she's a filmmaker herself, and she lives by that decree, that she will be open and honest about everything. So if I ask her, how much did it cost you for this, she'll tell me.
Right.
She'll dig through her thing and tell me, because if filmmakers all know...
Right.
Then we have something to bargain with. We can go to the distributor and say, I know what you're making.
Right.
You can't do that. Wait a minute. Exactly. How come you're making 99.9% and I'm getting nothing? What the hell, man? Exactly. So yeah, I love where you're coming from, and I promise I'll do the same thing. I will push other filmmakers to do the same thing. We'll stay in the same boat. So now we're going to go from the sort of that to the making of.
Yeah.
And in a word, this can be tough for you. In a word, what kind of director is Joe Badon? Any laugh? Laughter. Laughter.
I'm trying to think of the right. It's just one word.
You can describe yourself in as many words as you want. What kind of director are you?
I had my editor, who was also worked on my first film with me, as AC, as assistant cameraman. Yeah. He kept calling me Ed Wood.
Oh, jeez. Did he really?
And I wear that badge very proudly.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And because I love, and so I'm going to say Ed Wood is in a word.
There you go.
And only because he was just getting out there. He's writing a script. He didn't care how he was going to get this movie made. He's going to get it made.
Yeah.
And even if, like, okay, we can't find a real cemetery, we're gonna make a fake cemetery. That's right. You know, if the octopus doesn't have the mechanical parts, then we're just gonna throw his legs around. Like, we're gonna get this thing made.
That's true. I mean, that's passion, man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's passion. That's
what I love. I love that his philosophy, I totally live by. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it shows. It shows, because you just throw yourself into this.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. I hope other filmmakers who are listening to this, somebody who's thinking about making a film, gets off their ass and does what you do. That's inspiration, man. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
So for a film like Sister Tempest, because it mashes up, you talked about it mashes up several genres.
Sure.
How important will the editing be?
Oh, I think editing's like at least 50% of the film.
Wow.
You know, I what the guy who did Florida Project, I can't remember the director's name.
Oh, I can't remember it either.
But he said that editors should get director credits as well,
right?
Because they're just as important as a director is.
Right.
I totally believe it. They look at all the shots and they're the ones that pick out the best piece of acting from a shot, or the best shot, you know, composition and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, editing is very important. Also, like in my script, I have a lot of editing notes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, specifically because I'm all about the way a movie's edited.
Right.
Like like some of my favorite movies are just because of editing. Like F for Fake, if you've ever seen that movie.
Nope.
That's Orson Welles. That movie is like a crash course in insane editing. It's like jazz, but in editing. It's incredible.
Wow.
His new movie, Orson Welles, the movie that just came out, Other Side of the Wind, the one that never got finished, and now a bunch of editors got together and finished it. It's on Netflix.
It's
another film that they basically just looked at his notes and edited with his notes.
Wow.
And it's another film that's just wild editing. And I love it. And so I think editing is an art form that's just like writing and just like directing have all gotten into a rut. And they're all like, all, you know, the editors have all gone on from film school and said, this is the way it's supposed to be done. Just like writing with three-act structure.
This is the way.
And so with editing, I'm just as fascinated about breaking all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that we did and got inside my ear was we shot most of the scenes only once because we didn't have a lot of time. But there were some shots that I specifically was like, I want this shot twice because I have something in mind editing. And so the cameraman, our DP, would just follow the character around the room doing something. And then like this one scene, she's in her living room with a knife in God Inside My Ear, and she's like, she's hearing voices and she's like running around saying, who's there? Who's there? You know, get out of my house. And so I had him shoot the whole scene twice, just following around one fluid shot.
Yeah.
And then in editing, we layered the two shots on top of each other and went back and forth.
Oh.
And then we synced the sound up so it didn't sound choppy.
Right.
You know,
make her look like she's really crazy.
Yeah, and it was beautiful.
Man,
it was
awesome.
And but I had to talk my editor into it. Like, he's like, this is just going to look like bad editing. And once he did it, he was like, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And so I want to experiment with editing like all the other parts of the movie.
Wow,
you know?
Man. Wow, so. You're a rebel. You're a damn rebel, Joe. This is awesome. This is stuff I am so happy you're here. That's just awesome stuff. Seriously.
Thank you.
Okay, so have you put any thought into distributing your film? Are you a festival guy? Do you believe in festivals?
We're going to go through festivals first, for sure.
And what comes after festivals?
What's up?
What comes after festivals?
After festival is just submitting to distributors.
Right.
Like, you know, basically you're submitting to distributors while you're in festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because it usually takes a long time for them to get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of doing it at the same time. And festivals kind of get more people's attention at the same time. I definitely got a lot more attention from doing festivals.
Really?
You know, yeah, absolutely.
What festivals did you go into, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah, we ended up getting into about 30 festivals.
Wow.
I'm probably not going to remember most
of
them. Lot of them were low, like very small festivals. I didn't care the size of the festival.
You just wanted exposure, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the first festival we got into was a little festival called the Threadbare Mitten Film Festival.
Really?
And I can't even remember where they're located because I just can't remember. I think they're in Michigan.
I think.
And it was a tiny little festival. And I actually submitted to them late, but they were like, wow, this is really good. We'll get you in there.
What?
And so here was a big mistake I made.
Okay.
Was I was trying to get into a big festival first because everyone I talked to said, don't premiere at a tiny festival.
Right.
If you do that, you've ruined your festival chances.
Right.
That is a total lie.
Really?
A complete and total lie. Wow. Doesn't matter where you submit, where you premiere.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter at all. Actually, Sundance doesn't care if they get, like, if you premiered at small places.
Really?
Yeah. So you can premiere at the time. So I premiered at a tiny little festival first.
Yeah.
And actually, most of the first festivals we did were tiny festivals. But all of a sudden, bigger festivals started noticing.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It, because they were seeing the movie pop up everywhere.
Yeah, there was a bit of buzz happening.
And there was buzz. Yeah. Even from tiny little baby festivals, there was buzz that was happening. So I actually got into bigger festivals because of the tiny festivals.
You know what? People are going to be afraid to do that. I'm going to be afraid to do that. But because I've always been told, you got to hit those big ones first. You got TIFF, South by Southwest,
well,
you know, Sundance.
Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened. Because of that, I did submit to TIFF. I actually had the TIFF Midnight Madness director contact me.
Yeah.
Because somebody sent him my trailer, and he said, oh, I'm really interested in showing this film. Send me the movie, you know. But in the end, they didn't select it. But because of that, and because I had submitted to some other really big ones, I didn't submit anywhere else. And the movie just sat there, unsubmitted, like not playing anywhere for about 4 months. Because I was just getting rejected by the big festivals.
Right.
And so, like, if I would have kept following that rule, I would have not played anywhere.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd say submit everywhere. It doesn't matter if one person comes to that festival.
Right.
Submit to that festival.
Right.
Submit everywhere and you'll get into more. Also, a big tip that my festival friends will hate me for saying. Make a trailer.
Yep.
And email the festival, whatever the festival contact information, email them and say, this is my trailer. I'd really like to submit. We don't have a lot of money. If I can get a free waiver or if I can get a discount, I'd love that. I looked up a bunch of articles on this. You get into more festivals that way than if you blindly submit and pay the full price.
If only I'd known. That's what people are saying right now. They're going, if only I'd known this, I could have saved myself a shitload of money. You know, I did it. I think that works. That would be great.
There was about 4 months of not getting into any festivals. Yeah. And then I ran out of money. I started to email them with my trailer.
Yeah.
And then I started getting into festivals.
Oh, man. That's crazy. That is crazy. But that's great advice.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And your festival friends are going to really not like you very much.
But you need to, they need to know this.
Yeah. People need to know this, man.
It's just like lotteries. Lotteries are built on the backs of losers. And so are festivals.
Man. Wow.
You know, festivals need all these losers to keep to make their money.
That's right.
But usually I looked up a statistic. It's something like 75% of movies that are in festivals get in for free or are invited from other festivals.
Wow.
For free.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
So send them an email and tell them, you know, I want to get in for free.
What an amazing piece of advice, especially for filmmakers just starting out. Thank you very much, Joe. That's awesome.
No problem.
Okay. You know what? We're down to the final three questions I ask every guest that comes on the show.
Sure.
What is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, it was the festival thing.
Oh, really?
I think that was probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, it sounds like you spent a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you didn't have to.
Just sitting there, not building any buzz. I could have built about 4 months more of buzz on the film that I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't build. That's probably it. Also, if I could have gotten a celebrity in the film, I could have made more on the minimum guarantee.
Right.
The problem is when you get a celebrity, then you have to follow like all the laws of, you know,
exactly.
with Exactly. So
yeah, they've got, you know, unions to worry about. If you have
a friend of a friend of a friend that is a celebrity that will do it for free and undercover, or do it for barely anything, just like if there's any way, then do it. You know, another trick we did get a minor celebrity, this guy named William Tarkovsky. He's kind of a celebrity in Adult Swim cartoon level. Right. We used him with a voiceover. So if you have any voiceovers, a lot cheaper, and you can sometimes get celebrities to maybe do them for like next to nothing.
Yeah.
So if you can get a character that maybe wears a mask, that then you can put the voice of a celebrity in there.
Then
you have a celebrity name in your movie.
You can throw it in the credits for sure.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Any kind of way that you can get a celebrity, but you don't have to abide by the laws of the acting.
You know, the
laws.
Definition of celebrity is changing all the time because, you know, now they're talking about, well, how many friends do they have on Facebook and how many people are following them on Instagram?
Well,
you know?
Exactly. So if you can find a YouTube celebrity.
Right.
That is not an actor.
Yep.
That's another way, or any sort of Facebook social media celebrity that wants to get into acting, a musician that is famous that you're friends with that wants to get into acting, any sort of connections. And we all have that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sort of thing. So if you have a six degree of any kind of celebrity you can get in your movie, it will help on your minimum guarantee.
Get him in there. That's brilliant. So what's the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
A lot of it's been bad.
Really? Then you know what? Let's switch that question around. Maybe you can tell me the worst filmmaking advice you ever received.
I keep going back to this, but everybody was telling me about this, like getting the festival, getting a big festival.
Right.
That was the worst for me.
It's
like
a
I
lie.
Said, I haven't had a long career on filmmaking at this point.
Yeah.
But, and so, yeah, and the thing is most people's advice is garbage.
Wow.
It really is. Like, the best thing I've learned is to, like, for me, I work best if I go by instinct.
Right.
And if I don't follow a rule book.
Right.
And so many people are scared to, like, go by their instincts.
Yeah.
But, like, art is instinctual. Like,
it is.
And film is instinctual. Like, for me, like as far as the mechanical side of filmmaking, if you just write a list and cross things off the list, you can make a film.
Yeah.
Got to get all the actors, cross everything off, get all the props, cross everything off the list. You know, get all the locations, get all the dates. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Once you just write lists and cross things off lists.
Yeah.
There's no like you don't have to like download a certain app that you put everything in and etc. Like that's what everybody's like always trying to like figure out the right way to do things. There's no right way to do things.
Oh, beautiful advice. Beautiful advice. Seriously.
Thank you.
I've preached on this show that whatever gear you have is the right gear.
Yeah.
Just take it. And go, I don't care if it's your phone. I mean, Tangerine was made on a cell phone. I mean, come on. Get your ass off your chair and go make a film. And that's what you just said. It's like it's instinctual. Yep. You know, make that list and make that film. Oh, Joe, that was awesome. Seriously, I love it. Oh,
that's awesome.
You're turning out to be one of my favorite guests of all time. Oh, my God. You're awesome. Okay.
Thank you.
This is a tough one. I know it's going to be a tough one for you. I know it is. Name a film that inspired you.
Oh, sure. Well, just one?
Yeah, see, I'll give you a break. Three.
Three films.
Because there's a lot of films, I'm sure, that inspired you.
They're really odd ones.
That's okay.
Like films...
It's whatever inspires you.
Sure. First is a movie called Essex Spaceman. It came out in 2014. It's a trauma film.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it.
And when you think trauma, it's not like a normal trauma film. It's actually It's amazing. The film blew my mind. That's really? That's the movie that really inspired me to write God Inside My Ear and make that. And it was because they shot some of it on video. They shot some of it on 38 millimeter. They shot some of it on cell phone. They shot it on whatever they could.
Wow.
And it's a wild, weird film. It's totally gutsy. The editing is out the box strange. The writing, the dialogue is so weird. And they just did it. They did it like if an alien came down and said, "How do I make a movie? I'm just going to make a movie." And it's very strange.
Wow.
And totally ballsy.
What's the name of the film again?
Essex Space Bin.
Essex Space Bin.
That's like Essex, UK.
Yeah.
And basically, most people probably hate the film. If you watch it, you might be like, "This movie sucks." But there's something about it. There's some sort of like a punk rock attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
That they have in it. You know, like, I love punk rock because it's like, I don't know how to play instruments. We don't know how to sing, but we still want to play music.
That's right. We're going to do it no matter what.
Yeah,
passion,
exactly.
Passion, baby. And passion.
Yes. Oh, and there's just like a raw passion in that film.
Yeah.
That like is contagious when I watch it.
Now I'm going to have to see it. Now I'm going to have to see it. It's a trauma film. It's trauma.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on.
What is it? Monkey's Head.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier. That's true. Monkey's Head.
That really inspired me for God Inside My Ear. I mean, for Sister Tempest. And that is because of the way they structured the story.
Yeah.
And the story behind that is that Jack Nicholson, who's one of the writers on the film.
Really?
Jack Nicholson, yeah. And the monkeys and the director, I can't remember the name of the director. They all got together, basically smoked a lot of weed, dropped a lot of acid.
Holy
and just
shit.
And just wrote whatever.
They just made the film.
Yeah, that's how they wrote the script.
Yeah.
And they wrote the script just like whatever came to their heads. It was total, like, power of association, just associative writing.
Wow.
And I love that just because you don't see that very often at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And probably the last one is probably any Jodorowsky film.
Really?
Alejandro Jodorowsky. Only because he's another guy that is just contagious with passion. I would probably say Endless Poetry or Holy Mountain, one of those two. But it's just because he's just passionate about filmmaking, and it just oozes out into his films.
Wow.
I follow passion a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But know? Well, you know what? If it's contagious, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you see something like that, and it sparks something in you.
Yeah, it makes you want to make a film.
Exactly. And that's what the whole question was about. Name a film that inspired you. Well, you named three, four.
right.
That's okay. That's a tough one.
Essex Space Bin, I would say, is number one. That really, like, made me finally go, I need to make a movie.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. But that's it. Like, we each find passion in a different place. We find that inspiration somewhere. And you found it in this film. And that's brilliant, man. That's brilliant. I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay. Before we sign off, I have to remind everyone again, I'm going to put the link to your Kickstarter campaign for Sister Tempest in the show notes.
Nice.
People, get there. There's only a few days left. Help this man make a great film. Do it.
Yes.
So, what's next for Joe? Where can people find out about you?
Facebook, if you look up Joe Badon, Badon, right. On Facebook.
Right.
And Twitter, you can look up God Inside My Ear or Sister Tempest on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram, look up Joe Badon Art, because I post my art mainly. But I also post stuff about the film as well, film stuff.
Okay.
But then the next thing is getting this movie done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't try to look too far ahead. Like, whatever's in front of me, I want to get it done. You know, this might be the last film I make. I might be exhausted after this, you know, and be like, I'm done, you know.
Could be.
But I'm also kind of OCD. Like, I did comic books for a long time,
right.
And I was like, I'm done. I did comic books for 10 years. I want to do something different.
Right.
So I kind of feel it's kind of like bucket list stuff for me. Like,
that's,
you know, I want to do this. I'll get it done. And then, all right, what else do I want to do? I want to get that done, you know?
Holy shit, what an attitude. That's fantastic. No, seriously.
Oh, thank you.
It's like you set your mind to something, you just get it done.
Yeah.
Wow, you're inspiring, man. I'm telling you. You're inspiring me. I'm getting juiced. This is crazy. This is crazy, man. I love it. I absolutely love it. And again, people, you know, check the show notes. You'll find him. You'll find Joe Badon somewhere on my show notes, where to contact him. But most importantly, how to help him get his film made. So you know what, Joe? Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This is great.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking and on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.